This is Pit of the West, a weird Western podcast written by Tanner Adams and produced by B. Wynn, with main cast voices by Patrick Kilday, Billy Norris, and Matt McCann. Fog rolled in from the Gulf as Ezra and Sister Schultz arrived in New Orleans. It was Mardi Gras, and though they could faintly hear jazz music and the sound of festivities in the distance, all they felt was a sense of foreboding. They were now in the belly of the beast, ever closer to the abominable Craik family and their ultimate goal. Ezra helped Schultz off the ship, and the two walked down the docks towards the city.
I've never seen a place like this, sister. Where do you figure we start looking for the Craiks?
Let's start by finding somewhere to stay. There's a safe house my order maintains in the city. They'll keep us safe until we can find a lead.
I thought you were the last of your kind.
I am, but the church we're going to, His Holy Word, recognizes the order of St. Marcellinus Exorcista.
You sound so sure. Hey, what's that?
Ezra pointed at a missing child poster pasted up outside the docks. It read, "Missing, Stacy Guidry, age 8." Below was a picture of Stacy, all crooked teeth and pigtails, a big smile on her face. Further down the block, there were more posters, over a dozen.
Really shows you the state of the world. People are here celebrating while children are missing. Look, that poster's from over a year ago.
Some sick bastards out there.
The devil has his sway here.
Yeah, he does.
As the two moved deeper into New Orleans, the sounds of the city filled their ears. Schultz grabbed Ezra as he almost stumbled into the path of a parade float. Costumed revelers, many of them masked, filled the streets.
Guess we don't look so odd here after all. You know, I heard about Mardi Gras before, but the reality is, well, not that much different.
Yes, it's a party, all right. Keep close. We don't want to get separated.
You don't have to babysit me.
It wasn't long ago that you got yourself haunted.
Well, I can hardly be blamed for wanting a break. Besides, we fixed that.
I fixed it.
Your buddy in San Francisco? That wasn't my fault. He was the one with the vampire problem. But we came out okay from that, too. Hey, move it!
Ezra bumped into a reveler whose costume was a garish clash of striped colors and a widely smiling green and white Mardi Gras mask.
The hell are you looking at?
Just keep moving, Ezra.
As they walked away, Ezra turned his head. The empty eye holes of the mask drilled into their backs.
Ugh. We ought to be careful.
Exactly. The church we're going to visit will be able to provide us with some solid leads on the Craiks.
So, figure we're going to take the Celestial Resonator by force?
We're going to trade for it. I'll show you what they'll be after. You may wish to step back a little.
Schultz pulled out her cross, and Ezra's arm began to ache just looking at it. It was a complex design in sterling silver that Ezra recognized as a Celtic cross, with a circle in the middle, and complex knots woven into it. In the center was a rose and a sword.
Never seen one of those before.
They're one of a kind, and mine is the last. I know the Craiks would do anything to get their hands on it. Within it holds the power of exorcism, the power to banish demons. With this cross, my words and prayers are as holy fire. At least, that's what they believe.
What do you mean?
Novices, in my order, when there were novices to be trained, that is, use this as a focus for their prayer. I've been hunting so long that I can channel the holy word without it, but they don't know that.
Well, that's a relief. It won't be that hard to sell.
For the power he believes my cross holds, Elias Craik will trade us for the Resonator. I haven't met the man, but I know he'll make a deal if he thinks the odds are in his favor.
Believe me, I know the type.
As they walked through New Orleans, the sounds of revelry faded away, leaving the two of them on a silent street. The buildings around them were decaying husks, all rotting wood and crumbling bricks. At the end of the street, they reached a hulking stone church, which rose precariously into the air, its high steeple tilting as if it would fall at any moment. The church's stained glass windows were broken, no doubt the victims of many a thrown rock.
You sure this is the place? I'll let you go in. You know what holy ground does for my condition.
I'm certain we're here. Let's try the door. No, no, this can't be. It's locked.
There's other places we can go, right?
Not as far as I know. Even Edward had only heard of the Craig family. And with the church closed, our only source of information is gone.
But we know they're out there, and they need to be stopped. Someone in the town's gotta know.
They've avoided detection for decades, and no one who's found them came back to tell the tale. But you're right. We're so close now, Ezra. We just have to keep our...
faith. Right. Well, it's gotten us this far.
And it will continue to do so. Has your arm gotten any worse?
Ezra glanced down at his right hand, which he had kept covered one way or another for their journey. He slowly peeled off the glove which covered it and shuddered in revulsion.
Well, it ain't any worse. Ain't gotten any better either. Think all those monsters we've been fighting don't really count. Unless I gotta fight for my life, I think we can keep him at bay. But I know that double-dealing bastard has more tricks up his sleeve. The sooner we find him, the better.
Ezra, someone's watching us.
Ezra snapped his head up. The masked reveler from before was stepping out from a nearby alleyway. He stared at them enigmatically with his grinning fool's mask. Ezra quickly hit his arm as best he could.
Shit, it's that guy again. Hey, you! Get the hell out of here!
The reveler did not move, his mask seeming to mock them. Ezra's hand rested at his side, ready to draw on a moment's notice. These past few months had taught him to stay sharp. After a tense moment, however, the reveler turned and walked away.
That fellow's mighty suspicious, if it's even human. Based on the events of the last few weeks, bet it's some kind of phantom of Mardi Gras or something. I say we follow him.
What?
He, or it, saw my arm, sister. Wouldn't have been following us if it didn't know at least something. Besides, we have any other leads?
Suppose not. Let's go.
The two took off to where they last saw the reveler, leading them further and further into New Orleans. The two were barely able to keep up with the reveler as they dashed back towards downtown New Orleans. Every alleyway they entered, the reveler seemed to be just exiting. They kept up as best they could, but eventually lost sight of him. The two walked onto the main street, but no longer heard the sounds of drunken debauchery that carried so far over the city.
Damn it to hell! Fell sure can run fast. I think we're lost.
Don't blaspheme, Ezra. But yes, he can, and yes, we are.
Like you ever stopped me before. Let's ask that lady if she saw anything.
They saw a woman in the alley, her clothes a bundle of rags. She noticed them and shrank back, eyeing Ezra's gun. Schultz noticed this and approached her slowly.
Excuse me, have you seen a masked man come through here? He's wearing a bunch of bright colors and a smiling mask in green and white. He might have come through here a little while ago.
The woman's eyes seemed to focus, become more lucid at the mention of the masked man. A single tear fell from her eye, unbidden.
Yes, I seen him. He come down here every year around this time. He's taken everything from me. My everything.
What do you mean?
My everything. My darling Stacy.
Her hands shaking, she handed them a piece of paper. It was the same child missing poster they saw at the docks, with a picture of Stacy Guidry. Schultz crossed herself.
So the masked man took your daughter. How long ago?
Been a year now. Like I said, he come down around Mardi Gras, snatching up children who won't be missed. We had ourselves a little house in Treme. Not much. But her daddy ain't leave us much to live on. She wanted to see the floats for Mardi Gras, so I took her. My Stacy loved Mardi Gras. She let go of my hand for just one second. And she was gone. I looked all over for her, shouting her name, but no one could hear over the music. I ducked down an alley, still shouting my head off, and I see her. That man, with that terrible smile and mask. He had her. They disappeared down deeper into the city. I chased them till I about passed out, but they was long gone.
There was more than one of those posters. You talked to any of the other parents?
Yes, and they told me the same thing. They looked away for just one moment. One moment, and their children was gone.
Ma'am, we'll track down that bastard. Give him a piece of our mind. No one takes kids and gets away with it. What can you tell us about him?
I heard things, spoken to other parents. They spotted him all around town, but he's mostly at the St. Louis Cemetery by Bayou St. John. Most people figure I frittered away all my money for nothing, hiring private detectives to stake out the cemetery. Everyone said I was crazy, but you believe me, don't you?
Of course we do. We'll find your daughter.
Ezra nodded, grimly determined. He would make them pay, free the missing children, or avenge their passing.
Thank you so much. God bless you. I don't know if I should expect to see my Stacy again. It's been so long now. But knowing that bastard that stole her won't steal no more children would be enough. Look at me. You doing all this, and I ain't even tell you my name. I'm Florence Guidry.
I'm Sister Schultz, and this is...
Ezra Gray. I trust you'll keep our involvement a secret. We ain't here for the party.
Oh, of course. You can trust I won't tell anyone. You got someone looking for you?
Ezra just stared at her and nodded once.
Well, Mr. Gray, I won't tell anyone you're around. I don't know what you done, but I know the Lord brought you to me today. You're a good man, Mr. Gray.
I don't know about that, but God knows I'm trying.
Ezra and Schultz took Florence's advice and arrived at the St. Louis Cemetery just as a light evening rainfall enveloped the city. They found refuge inside a blessedly unused crypt, kept the stone door opened up enough for them to see. Mardi Gras would continue in the rain, there was no doubt, but in the cemetery, Ezra and Schultz's vigil began, both determined to see their task through.
It's awful, this spirit or creature has been stealing children for years, and the police didn't bat an eye. How many kids will be taken before the police notice?
Kids disappear every day, sister. And people have a funny way of forgetting about something they'd rather not know about. A monster like this has probably been working this city for some time. Till tonight.
You're damn right.
Amen, sister. From what Florence told us, I figure the monster takes the kids back here, but something like that would get noticed real quick.
We'll have to see.
Why don't you get some rest, sister? I'll take first watch. If we're hunting this monster tonight, you'll need all the rest you can get.
No, allow me.
I said, I'll take first watch. You don't worry about me.
Schultz saw that hard look in Ezra's eyes, the same one she saw when he nearly killed the patriarch in Grace Falls. Before Ezra became her ally, she saw a young man twisted with rage and revenge. Saving these kids was personal.
All right, Ezra. Thank you. I'll try to sleep.
Schultz didn't think she'd be able to fall asleep, but she bundled her cloak as a makeshift pillow, slept, and dreamt.
Where am I?
You're in hell, with me.
This isn't real.
Oh, but it is. And it will be for you. Schultz saw the kingdom of hell. Sinners swam across lakes of hellfire and were pushed back in by capering demons wielding wicked spears. All around her, the agony of the damned filled her ears until she was sure it would drive her mad. Asmodeus himself sat on a throne of bleached bone, wearing a paisley vest and wide-brimmed hat that contrasted sharply with the nightmare around him.
What do you want?
You don't even ask my name. Straight to the point. Just like my boy, Ezra.
I don't need to ask, Asmodeus. Now I'll ask you again. What do you want?
I want you to give up this foolish errand. This does not concern you, Huntress.
You're damn straight this concerns me. This concerns everyone. I won't stop until you're banished from the earth. You've caused enough pain and suffering.
Well, look at you taking the high ground. What a good Christian soldier you are, killing demons and the evils of the earth. Well, I won't be so easy to vanquish. You're playing at the high rollers table now. The stakes are higher than ever before. Ante up, sister.
I play to win, Asmodeus.
Just remember this friendly warning when I'm dragging you down to hell with me. Schultz clutched her habit closer to her as she slept and shivered. For the first time in many years, she was truly scared. There was no going back after this point. She was all in.
Sister. Sister. Wake up. It's here.
Already?
Look, in the courtyard. It's carrying something.
Schultz peeked around the entrance to the crypt and saw the costumed reveler.
It's carrying a sack. You see that? Probably an unfortunate child. We'll need to keep our distance so it doesn't spot us.
Right. We'll track it down to its lair and rid the world of one more monster.
The two walked out of the crypt as the reveler rounded a corner. The sack wiggled and squirmed till the reveler dropped it on the ground and silenced it with a swift kick. It followed quietly until it entered a huge mausoleum. They waited a few minutes, not wanting to alert it to their presence, and opened the door. The ceiling towered high above their heads, the walls lined with coffins stacked on open shelves. A pair of footprints were visible on the dusty stone floor, and the trail went straight through the far wall into solid stone.
Figure there's some kind of hidden passage. Let's look around for the switch.
Good idea.
The two felt around the far wall for a few minutes, frantically trying to find the hidden switch, knowing their chances of saving the boy lessened with each passing minute. Ezra bumped a loose brick in the wall with his foot, and the wall opened outward. A dimly lit stone staircase wound underground, dark as pitch.
Guess you were right.
Ezra and Schultz walked down the staircase, their steps quietly echoing in the silence. Ezra grabbed an unlit torch from a wall sconce and lit it with a flint and tinder. They descended, going deeper and deeper underground, until they could barely make out the door they entered from.
How far down does this go?
The staircase finally ended and opened up into a wide stone hallway with a dirt floor, where they saw the trail continued.
Judging from the look of this place, it's probably been using these catacombs for years. Decades, even.
Yes, who knows when these were built. This is a city of the dead, make no mistake. These catacombs hold many secrets. We've stumbled onto just one of them. Keep your eyes sharp.
Way ahead of you. We'll save those kids, come hell or high water.
They followed the tracks in silence. Ezra's joints ached, his rheumatism becoming aggravated in the damp catacombs, but he kept his corrupted right hand steady over the handle of his gun. Schultz held her cross with her left hand and wrapped her rosary tight around her right like a set of brass knuckles. As they continued, a rank smell filled the air. Ezra spotted something, a patterned scrap of cloth on the ground, and a few blonde hairs. Neither could speak for a moment.
We must be close now.
On their left was an area of broken wall where the tracks led. They squeezed through and found themselves in an underground sewer, their shoes splashing in brackish gray water. The odor was pungent, but they pressed on, Ezra raising his bandana to cover his nose. A noise from up ahead stopped them in their tracks.
God, I hope we're not too late.
Ezra grit his teeth and drew his gun from its holster, ready for bloodshed.
Someone's coming. Get up against the wall.
Ezra dropped the torch, plunging the sewer into darkness. Soon, light filled the passage to their left, and they pressed themselves flush against the wall. They watched silently as the reveler walked across from them, holding a torch, followed by another reveler, then a third. Ezra and Schultz held their breath as the revelers passed, and luckily, they went unnoticed.
There's more than one of these Mardi Gras demons?
I guess so. We'll follow them after a minute or so. It'll be dark, but our eyes should adjust enough.
Oh, God, do you hear that?
As they followed the revelers, they could hear high-pitched screams and the rattling of iron cages. Ezra's heart beat hard in his chest, fear and rage intermingling as they reached the lair of the monstrous revelers. He had learned from his weeks on the trail with Schultz that you had to expect the unexpected when the supernatural was at work. He had fought many monsters on the road to Louisiana, but this intentional, malicious evil was by far the darkest. It was time to end it once and for all. The lair was a central hub for the sewer, converging into a tall atrium several stories tall, supported by heavy columns. They saw the lair of the Reveler, the demons of Mardi Gras, and their hearts sank in despair. Children hung in cages suspended from the ceiling, their screams ringing through the room. One of the Revelers, there were five in all, jabbed at one of the cages with a stick. Ezra couldn't stand by anymore, and he rounded the corner, revolver drawn.
Get your hands in the air, you bastards, now!
Ezra, what are you doing?
Saving the children! There ain't no problem that a bullet can't solve, even with these monsters.
The revelers looked at each other, and the room fell silent. They pulled revolvers as well, and aimed at the two of them.
We ain't monsters. Not like that, anyway. Now drop your weapon, Ezra Gray.
I don't think you know what you're up against.
Ezra, don't shoot! Your condition... we can't fight them like this.
I don't care. These scum-sucking sons of bitches don't deserve to draw another breath. We'll deal with the consequences as they come, but they're not walking out of here alive.
As you wish, sir. Boys, let's oblige them.
Sister, get down!
The sound was deafening as the revelers opened fire. Schultz ducked down behind the doorway as the bullets flew. Ezra dove behind a column, gritting his teeth as the bullets buzzed by him like hornets. He waited until they stopped, then made his move.
All right. My turn now.
Ezra drew on his dark power, allowing the demon inside him to take over. His hand moved of its own accord, each round moving exactly where he wanted it to. Time seemed to slow for him, but his hand moved with unnatural speed. He screamed a battle cry, calling out for vengeance. The bullets flew true, each round flying towards their hearts. He saw a darkish aura appear as the round struck, and they bounced off. The aura disappeared as soon as he saw it. Ezra moved in, dropping his revolver, and extended his claws.
He's coming! Quick! Shoot him! Shoot him!
Too late.
Before they could say another word, Ezra sliced the arms off two of the revelers, slashing through their muscle and flesh. One of the revelers stepped back, cocked his revolver, and shot Ezra in his claw arm twice. Ezra fell to the ground, his arm burning like it was dipped in hot tar. Black ichor dripped out of his arm.
Ah, damn it! What did you do to me?
Hurts, don't it? That's cold iron, boy.
How did you know?
'Cause the Crakes know everything happens in our territory, boy. You're in for a world of shit.
Schultz hid from the firefight, being unarmed except for her Bible and rosary. She saw Ezra go down, and she knew she wouldn't be any help in a fight like this. But she grabbed a length of pipe anyway.
Better go down swinging. Hey, you bastards! Why don't you... Ugh.
Before she could get a swing in, someone snatched the pipe out of her hand. She turned just as the pipe swung towards her head, held by a sixth reveler. And her world went black.
The bitch out, Clyde?
Yep, she went out like a light. She weren't much of a fighter, Rufus.
Didn't figure. This one here's a bit of a weak one, too. Yeah, you won't be much of a problem, will you, Mr. Gray? Now let's get him on the boat. Father will be expecting him soon. Get up, boy. You ain't done yet.
What you want to do with Merle? He ain't gonna be any good without no arms. Let me see here. Well, shit, he's dead. As good as dead, anyway.
Leave him, brother. There's crocs in these sewers. They'll take care of him.
Ain't you gonna bury him?
Hell no. He weren't no more than a second cousin. He ain't worth the trouble. You got a lot to learn, boy. But don't worry, we'll teach you. Unlike Merle here, you still got some use. Speaking of which, Clyde, let the kids go. Daddy ain't gonna be needing them no more.
Sure thing. Hey, you little snot-nosed gutter snaps, it's your lucky day. You don't have to be sacrificed no more.
This don't make any sense.
As Merle expired on the ground, blood oozing from his wounds, the corruption on Ezra's arm grew up his shoulder. He could feel its dark tendrils move further to his chest, ever closer to his heart. The cold iron bullets were lodged in his arm, but the demonic flesh simply shifted around it with unyielding agony.
The corruption's closer now. Not near his heart, though. At least Merle was good for something. Let's get a move on, brother. We got appointments to keep.
Ezra's consciousness faded in and out as he was dragged out of the sewer, the pain rolling over him like a tidal wave. He was vaguely aware that his situation was dire, but the pain was all-consuming, and soon he fell into darkness. He awoke with a start as he was thrown down like a rag doll, and he was quickly handcuffed in place. Ezra blearily opened his eyes to find himself on a small steamboat, a gun pointed directly at his face. He slowly turned his head to see Schultz captive as well. He looked up to see the Krakes with their masks off, greasy black hair and yellow teeth, their faces alight with a malicious grin. He could do no more than wait and wonder how it all went so wrong. Join us next time for the final episode of Pit of the West. Thanks for listening to Pit of the West. Featured in this episode are the voices of Patrick Kilday, Billy Norse, Alyssa Limerick, Jason Limerick, Dane White, Bill Adams, and Tanner Adams. Special thanks to Alex Wink for the intro and outro music, Ariel Perez for cover art, and John Harbaugh for additional firearm sound effects.
Hey, this is Fee from Pit of the West. We're at Pit of the West on Twitter. Join us on next week's episode.